It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's there. They're both snowed in, but there's lots of Microsoft news. A big event coming up tomorrow. We're not sure what it's all about. They call it something for employee experience. We'll speculate. We'll also talk about Microsoft 365 in education, Windows 10, and Xbox. It's all coming up next, of course, on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 710, recorded Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Tab Hygiene. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Barracuda. Hackers are always looking for the weakest link in your security configuration, especially in your email security. Barracuda's new Threat Analyzer tool helps you gain visibility into your particular vulnerabilities. Visit barracuda.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Here they are, ladies and gentlemen. The stars of our show, Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello from Snowmageddon.
Oh, yeah, you had snow, didn't you? My mom was...
I'll take your Snowmageddon and raise it another 2 feet.
Oh, Lord.
No, but you know what? 16 inches of snow
in
the
New York,
city...
That's a big deal.
...is a lot.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a stone of snow. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Thurrow.com, and leanpub.com. He is also here. He is also snowy in Lower Macungie Valley.
30 inches where the most snow fell.
30 yeah. inches.
I'll just point out, you know, I moved from Boston to avoid this kind of weather, and since I've been here, literally two of the worst storms I've ever been in have occurred.
You brought it with you.
Wow. Wowie zowie.
One of the first conversations I had here was with a neighbor who said he'd always intended to move south to, when he retired, but that thanks to global warming, he could just stay here. And I'd go ask him how he's doing, but his house looks like an igloo right now, and I probably couldn't get it.
Yep.
It's getting warmer. I could tell. Let's start with Windows 10.
We
usually bury that, so let's bring it right up to the surface here. What's the latest, Mary Jo?
So one of the things that's happened in the past few days is Microsoft has now created a what's next page for the new Edge, which is very handy because a lot of times I am struggling to find where they are putting which features are in which ring and what's coming when. Mm. So now they've created this page that is just all about that. It's MicrosoftEdgeInsider.com/what's next, what's hyphen next. And it's a feature roadmap. Look at that. Like a whole bunch of features listed in a roadmap. It's not perfect, sadly. You guys know I'm not OCD because we've had this discussion on this show a few times. But if you look at this roadmap, it's not in any kind of order at all.
They're just trying to bug you. They're just doing that to bug you.
No, it's like, here's the features. Here's a line for Edge 90, then 88, then 87, then 89. I'm like, wait, it's not in order by version. It's not in order by status. It's not in order by date. I'm like, so what kind of order is on this page?
Leo, is it me or are some people just never happy around here?
Look at this page, you guys. Look at this page and tell me what happened here. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know what happened
here. We're going right now. We're going to Microsoft's new Next Edge page. Here it is.
I mean, I give them a high mark for effort. Like they're putting future versions on here.
I'll tell you what's next. Squash and quinoa. That's what's next. Here's the feature roadmap.
So this should be a filterable. Like you should be able to click
on
header and have
it
sort.
Oh, no, I can't.
You can't.
Can't sort. No. Yeah, that would be nice. You know what? If you did it in Excel and embedded it, you could do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
or even use Fluid Framework anything. And when
we
it
could
updated,
use these checkboxes always... in development, rolling out, launched. So we can sort it by that column.
Yeah.
There's also tags, but there's nothing. Here's date added. We could do that. Well, that's not. How about last updated? Yeah.
No. Yeah.
No. I'll give you guys like good marks for trying to put this all in one place, because it's been hard to figure out for me anyway what was coming when. And the way they're talking about it is launched means it's rolling out to the mainstream users and stable. Rolling out means beta channel. In development means dev canary. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Here's version 90, 88, 87, yeah, right? 90, right? 90. That's a little out of order.
A little out of order.
What is the rationale rationale behind that order?
Know.
It's just
no.
Yeah. It's a sign up sheet. It's whoever got there.
It's gonna be good. One day this page is gonna be good. It is.
Okay. Well, at least it exists.
It exists.
And
yes.
You could cut and paste put it into Excel.
Previously had a different roadmap page. This is just a better one.
Yeah.
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 They had an enterprise. You could look up Edge enterprise features through the Microsoft 365 roadmap. You could, if you filtered by Edge, excuse me.
Yeah. Right. And but a I lot mean, there of was these a tech features community site for Edge
yeah.
before.
Yeah.
MicrosoftEdgeInsider.com/what's-next. Enjoy.
I mean, and I was looking through the list. Like, is there anything you're like, I cannot wait until date of birth field now supported in autofill, right?
Oh, thank goodness.
Exactly.
Thank goodness.
So it looks like, you know, most of this is like 88, 89, and 90. There is actually one feature in here for version 91.
Yep.
So it's not exact. Well, where are we now? We're at 88?
Yeah, 88.
Is shipped, yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. They're giving you some heads up.
Yeah.
I like it. And the new Paul he doesn't would. Complain about anything, so I'm fine with it.
Wow. Wow. This is a first. Are you guys going to switch jobs, switch roles?
I might be sick. I don't know what's going on.
All right.
By the way, we should talk about vertical tabs too, because we were both going back and forth about this the other day. So yeah. I vertical tabs is actually in Edge 88, which I didn't realize. You have to use flags to enable it.
Oh. Nice.
But, right. So it's there. And I've been one of these people who is like, I can't wait for vertical tabs. I think I'm going to love this. I'm going to use it all the time. So I enable it. And then I'm like, oh, I can't use this. Like it's I'm like, that's it's going to take a huge amount of retraining on my part because of the way I use tabs. And now they're like the tabs I want to access. Like if I want to get one in the bottom, I have to go all the way to the bottom. To tap on it instead of across. I don't know. I want to like same, vertical tabs.
Same reaction.
I want to use them because it's easier for me to see the many different tabs I have open. I'm one of those people who has terrible tab hygiene. At minimum, I have 20 tabs open at any time.
Wow.
Usually more than 20. So for me, the idea of having vertical tabs along one side so I can see more of what each tab is by name is good. But actually using it in my workflow the way I've gotten accustomed to clicking on tabs is going to take some retraining. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like it. I just don't like it. The visually,
you don't like
it just doesn't
all.
Feel right. Yeah.
Hmm.
No, I see the point of it. I'm it's like putting your taskbar on the side. One out of every 10 people, whatever, is like, oh, yeah, this is for me.
Yeah.
But I think
yeah.
most people are like, this is something weird about it.
It's just what you're used to. Steve Gibson loves vertical tabs.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. On Windows, I always keep my taskbar at the bottom, but it does make sense to put it on the left. You have more real estate horizontally than you do vertically. On the Mac,
I can never get used to that.
On the Mac, I put it on the left. On the other hand, I don't when I have multiple monitors because then it doesn't make sense anymore. So
it's
confusing. You know, life is hard.
It's a hard computer science problem.
It is.
Yeah. I know. I feel like we're just like we're getting so accustomed to like all the bells and whistles coming into Edge that every little thing now we're complaining about, or I am, I should say. I shouldn't say Paul is.
Thank you.
Edge /flags/sharp-edge-vertical-tabs. Okay. For everybody who is wondering.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I would just go to flags and then search for it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what a sensible person would do.
Right.
It's not a mess like the What's New page. Let's just say that.
When you enabled this feature, did it enable the UI in settings so that you can toggle it on or off or whatever? Or is it just put the feature
on? Yeah, I think it did. I think it did toggle that so I could just shut it off. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give it another try because I like the idea of it. I just think I just have to have a time when I'm not so like, and I was in the middle of writing something. I was on deadline.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's
this
not
isn't the right time to do
no,
that.
No. The theory is that you have a lot of tabs open, right? You're a hoarder. And you just don't have enough room to spread it across the top of the page. No. They get smaller and smaller, and you can't read them. So if you put them vertically, they have a consistent width.
Yeah, but this premise is that you are visually identifying a tab in a row and clicking on it. I mean, don't most people, control tab to get there?
I never use control tab.
Not if you have 100 open, that would be control tab. Control tab.
I click on them individually. Like I go up to my upper whatever that's called bar along the top, and I click on it.
Yeah,
that's how
you
I get
actually
it
click on it.
Yeah,
you know, you might be happier with a Mac. Just throwing it out there,
Paul.
We don't have that.
Wow.
We don't have vertical tabs. You don't. Okay. You gotta.
Wow.
You know. Actually, wait a minute. Maybe we do. Maybe Safari does do that. I don't remember now. I've forgotten.
No matter what
Safari does. I mean, Opera
is,
does.
That's not enough.
Everybody else
does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not enough for me to switch. I'm sorry. It is.
Do you, just out of curiosity, Mary Jo,
yes,
does your desktop filled with icons of a random?
No.
No, she puts everything in the root of C, Leo. It's,
no, but you
CP
know what I do?
Star.
Paul's seen me do this. Yeah. I use my apps full screen pretty much all the time.
Me too. That's the right way to do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I will say Apple's done a much better job of that on the Mac, not to keep bringing up the Mac, but I would.
What are you doing?
Recently.
A field guide?
Remember
Mac?
I was saying, yes. Remember yes, I was saying control Windows key, left arrow, right arrow? Because I use the workspaces and I have everything full screen in the workspace. And I find that a very easy way to work. This was a debate early on in computer sciences. Do you do tiled windows or overlapping windows?
Yeah.
Right.
And overlapping one. But
tiles are way easier.
I think that's right. I think it actually was
way easier.
That was a bad road they went down. So it's only a short step from tiles to full screen.
It is.
I thought you were going to say it's only a short step from overlapping windows to chaos. But yeah.
Well, that's also true. Both are true. Both are true.
Yeah, right.
Hmm.
Yeah, especially on laptops, we'll often use everything full screen. Yeah. It feels natural.
It's the iPad way.
Display, it gets a little harder, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have a giant, if you had a 49-inch display, you're not going to go full screen.
No.
That would be nuts.
No.
Right.
With Notepad, it's like 148-point text. It's like watching a tennis game just to get to the end of the sentence.
That was the thing about the Duo, right? Like, I thought I would really like the idea of two apps side by side filling each of the screens. Sure. And then I'm like, you know what? I use one app at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't ever have the two apps side by side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think, right. And I think that's the natural use case on a phone. I feel like one of the things that gets lost when we try to bring PC interfaces to a phone or phone interfaces to a PC is that you can do it, but you know, how do people use these things really? Like, will this turn into a thing? And I think a lot of times those things just fail because they don't, things that make sense on one platform, one type of device don't make sense on another necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, like live tiles in the start menu is just like that. On a phone, it made tons of sense because you would glance at it.
Yeah.
But on Windows desktop, it's, you know, that's UI's hidden all the time.
Yeah.
You know, sit there and toggle it like a whack-a-mole game all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out to be much harder to do overlapping windows. It's a lot easier, and maybe that's why we like it, because it's snappier to do full screen.
Yeah. More and more, I just live in my browser. I look at my workflow, I just am in the browser like maybe like 95% of the day.
You know, maybe you should switch to Chromebook then.
I could. Windows 10X.
There's no notepad. There's no notepad.
Maybe an Edge book.
An Edge book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or an iPad.
Did either of you keep your Duos? No, you both, they're all gone, right?
I never got one.
Never got one, and Mary Jo returned it.
I sent my back.
I'm just curious if the camera's gotten better with firmware updates, you know?
I haven't heard anything about the camera getting better.
It's so terrible. Yeah.
They've done one major update just recently to the Duo that was more about like stability, but not, I don't think it was specific to the camera at all.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Windows 10 in cloud.
In cloud.
In cloud.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Paul's like, what is this?
Yeah. What is this?
I looked at it and I was like, this looks like a Mary Jo thing. I'm going to let her handle this.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is really, this thing, it's called Windows 10 in cloud. It's for people who use Microsoft Endpoint Manager and Microsoft Intune. So it's for IT pros who need to set up and maintain a bunch of Windows 10 PCs. And the idea is, if you have a bunch of users or a subset of users who have very simple needs, like they're mostly running Microsoft apps with a couple line of business apps, and you want to just make it very simple in terms of how you maintain this, you set it up, you do the Windows updating, you use this profile, or like the set of settings that Microsoft has put together called Windows 10 in Cloud. And it's not a new version of Windows. It's not like Windows 10 in S mode. It's nothing like that. It's just a profile, basically. And it's meant for a very specific targeted type of customer. It's meant for people who use Windows 10 Pro, Enterprise, or Education. That's who it's for. It's not for home users. And I think what this is Microsoft, without calling this out, but like paving the ground for 10X to launch and for cloud PC to launch. Because if you read how they describe this, it's all about modern desktop management, and it's meant for people who have very simple needs. That's Windows 10X, right? Those are the code words for that. And
by the way, the very simple needs thing, though, I feel like that's most people. Certainly most office workers, productivity workers.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it almost sounds like they're diminishing, you know, how much work those types of people do. I mean, I think, in other words, they don't have like super special needs with regards to crazy, strange applications or
exactly. You know, whatever. They said it's like for people who don't use complex settings or custom agents. That is most people, right? That's like the bulk of information.
I think so.
Workers,
yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's all about making it simpler for IT to set up, manage, and maintain this group of PC Windows 10 PCs. So for me, this is like them trying to be like Chrome OS, right? It's like, and also in the education market, how we've talked about, there's no simple way to manage education PCs that are Windows 10 PCs right now. I think this is them trying to start touching that problem.
What is Microsoft Endpoint Manager?
Microsoft Intune, basically.
Oh, God, right? They got to kill everything that's right in this world, don't they? Oh,
I know. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, Intune, what I'm looking at. In 2019, they announced a new brand called Endpoint Manager that replaces ConfigMan in Intune. So they're trying to make this one continuum, right, instead of having all these point products. So if you're an IT pro who uses Intune now or Microsoft Endpoint Manager or Config Manager, you're probably going to want to take a look at this and just see if it's something you might be interested in. It's nothing you have to buy. It's something you'll already have the licenses for, most likely.
The System Center brand is gone. Is that what this means? So is it like Microsoft?
System Center is still there, right? So System Center Operations Manager is still there, but ConfigMan and Intune, they were kind of like two products on the same continuum of things that people were working with. And so when Brad Anderson was there, his whole mission was, let's make this way easier because right now we have these two sets of products.
Let's rename it.
Right? rename it into one brand and let's try to make all these things be Microsoft Endpoint Manager. And if you have the license to one, you have the license to the other. That was like back in 2019. So a lot of people, when they hear Endpoint Manager, they still don't know what that is. But if you know what Intune is, you know
what it is. SCCM, basically, an Intune.
Yeah. Okay. ConfigMan. Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is profiles. Like, this is about configurations and profiles. Microsoft has a page specifically all about this, like a website that you can find by looking for Windows 10 in cloud configuration. If you look that up, you'll come to this subsite that they've built, and it shows you what they're trying to do with this, frequently asked questions, how Azure Active Directory fits in at Intune and Endpoint Manager. So yeah, I would say if you're thinking this could be something you're interested in, go take a look at that page. There's a whole booklet on how to set it up and what it is. Download the guide. That's what I would say.
interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it is not a new version of Windows 10. They kept saying that over and over. This is not a new version of Windows 10. It's not us trying to fix S mode. It's none of those things, right?
Don't get your hopes
describe
up.
It as a new,
don't get
a new
your hopes
version
up
of Windows then.
There you go. Windows 11. Is it Windows 11? Is that what it is?
Well, I think whenever, like, when people see the words in cloud, like, the first thing you think is, uh-oh, this is Windows in the cloud. This is Windows 365. Like, this is right. The thing we've all been fearing, but this is not what this is.
It is a strange term.
It is.
But okay.
It is.
But this yeah. is, so, like, Intune compared to SCCM back in the day, SCCM used to be, like, the on-prem thing, and Intune was the cloud thing. And so, they're just indicating this is managed from the cloud, whatever it's called now, Endpoint Manager, which is a dashboard that you get as an admin, but it's like cloud-based delivery of updates and applications and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. And it says on the page, too, this could be for locally installed apps or virtualized apps. That's what makes me think this is kind of paving the way possibly for cloud PC, right? Like, it could be connected to this somehow. Is my guess, but they don't. Yeah,
well,
they don't say that.
Our favorite hobby here on Windows Weekly is to punt things forward to the next event, and there is a Microsoft Ignite event coming up. So maybe we will learn more about that stuff.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. Yep, Ignite March 2 to 4. Registration is now open. By the way, you can register for the virtual event now.
Ignite 2 Electric Boogaloo. That's what they're going to call it.
And we're going to be doing a little post wrap up show for that with Stephen Rose. That'll be fun. With Brad also. So, yeah, be good.
God, they just let everyone into these things now.
I know. I'm like, really, Brad? What happened to me and Paul doing this? Like, why is Brad in it?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what the Windows 10 in cloud thing is. I had to read the blog posts and the brochure and everything else a few times to try to make sense of it myself. But if you're an IT pro who's used to managing configurations and profiles, I think you'll understand this a lot more than me. Let's just say.
Obviously me as well. Yep.
Oh, and there's no Windows 10 insider builds this week. They announced today, right? Like in the dev channel. Yeah. They had a glitch, they said.
Oh, my.
It did not pass their quality gates.
Oh.
And so it's come back next week, Dev Channel testers.
Man, this is a bad time to be doing a show and not, you know, day trading. Microsoft stock is now up $5.48, an all-time high, 244.99.
Wow. Remember it used to be stuck at 30?
Yeah.
For like a decade?
Yeah. Have they split since then? Or is this just eight times 800%?
I bet they have.
Not recently, right? Yeah.
No, but I mean, Ballmer left how many years ago? Yeah. And for most of his tenure, it was in the 30s. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it's at least 800% over those days, if not more.
Yeah. It's just like my retirement savings up 800% this year. Yeah. So that's great.
It's great.
Big money maker.
If you had invested $1 in 1943, you'd be rich retired. By now. Yeah.
Yep.
You want to talk about Microsoft 365?
Yeah. So there's been a number of reports recently about a kind of an all-hands meeting that Microsoft had internally. And the new one is from, I think it's Business Insider. Let me just check on that. Yeah, Business Insider that caught, I think they actually listened to a recording of it. And Microsoft Corporate Vice President of Education, Aaron Megiddo. I don't want to mispronounce that. Megiddo. Anyway, told employees at the company last week about some milestones in education, right? And of course, that event that we talked about recently just occurred virtually, so I'm sure it was all kind of tied to that. But the big good news is Teams usage in education has skyrocketed. So 1 year ago, there were 7 million people in education using Teams. Today, there are 100 million students using Teams. Like, it went from 7 to 100 million in 1 year. And, of course, COVID. Thank you. You know, again, everything is great because of COVID.
Can I ask you a question about that stat?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know the Teams stat Microsoft gives out is 115 million daily or monthly active users, right? So I guess that doesn't include education if this other stat
well,
is
so,
right.
Yeah, so these guys are not, I don't think they can be counted the same way because students, of course, are okay. different than business users. Who, you yeah. know, so there are probably 100 students registered as Teams users, but as far as yeah. daily okay. active users, not all 100 million mm-hmm. are using it every single day.
I think it's I gotcha. Okay.
Probably the theory there.
Okay.
But yeah, that's been a big question. Because one thing they didn't do as part of their earnings, and I'm sure we talked about this last week, is they never supplied a new Teams number, mm-hmm. right? It seems kind of odd. Like they've been doing that fairly regularly. And of course, Teams usage, as we know, has gone up dramatically during the pandemic. But we didn't get that. Again, you know, Ignite, the second Ignite's coming up. So maybe they're holding it off on that. And then the other big news was kind of it was kind of an implicit, at least internal, admission that Chromebooks were doing really well in education, which is something we sort of already know. I mean, every year at this bed event, Google also comes out and talks about Chromebook, usage and their acceptance rate in, or I should say the growth rate in, education, but inside of Microsoft, they said that Chromebook owns 60% of the K 12 education market in the United States. And that was at the start of the pandemic, right?
Wow.
So it's possible that share has actually grown. And we know that, you know, Chromebooks are kind of an interesting thing because a lot of people who are tech enthusiasts, and certainly the people who comment on my site are like, I don't see these things out in the world. I don't understand why you keep talking about them. You know, they're not a big deal. And it's like, actually, the Chromebook usage share in education especially is really big. And it's not just the United States, right? It has exploded through Western Europe. We know Australia, New Zealand, and Microsoft, as part of this meeting, says that Chromebooks now have major market share, this is their term, in Japan, Indonesia, and throughout Asia. And we do know also that one out of every 10 personal computers that were sold last year was a Chromebook, at least one out of every 10. So it's you know, it's real. It's one of those, this is not some kind of like a red herring, like, oh, this isn't, you know, no one's really using these things. Or if they are using them, they hate them. You know, it's like, I don't think it's like that. I mean, I'm sure there are people who can't stand Chromebooks, but I think the reality, and you can see it in the fact that Microsoft is making Windows 10X, is that this type of solution makes sense. Not just for education, by the way, I think this type of solution makes sense for business markets as well.
For me.
You say that, I mean, as a completely normal person who has like standard productivity tasks that you have to do every day. Yeah, yeah. You absolutely could get by. I could get by with it as well, except for some of the outlier things that I do around development or, even virtualization actually is possible now in Chromebook. So, I mean, it's getting there, you know, you can run Linux apps, so you can get Visual Studio Code going on there if you want to. So you can do software development.
The thing we're not stating explicitly but should be obvious is the reason everybody cares about this is the whole hook 'em young kind of thing, right? Like if people get used to using Chromebooks young, then they keep using them.
And then they enter the workforce.
That's the thought. Yeah. Right. They're using Google Workspace, right?
If you're used to Google services, that's what you expect and demand when you go into the workforce. And that's always been the problem for Microsoft is that that's what might happen. So
I'm not sure. I might question that conventional wisdom because Apple was the first to do that. And I think that there's a whole generation that grew up with Apple computers in the classroom. That the minute they got in the workforce, they didn't buy.
Well, you know what? So yes, you're right. And I think you can kind of explain this because if you used a Mac growing up and you went into work and they were using Windows, you could make that transition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Easy.
If you used a Windows machine and you had to use a Mac for some reason later in life, you could, people can make those transitions. But I think those services are kind of a different animal, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're used to Gmail and Google Calendar and Google Workspace or whatever, obviously those things will work on whatever computing device you choose to use. But I feel like those types of things are stickier than the like the platform.
Yeah, that might be true. My daughter used Google in high school and college. And then when she graduated, she transferred it over to her own Google account. Google Docs. Everything was in there, and it was all in there. It was just it is somewhat of an investment, not just in how you work, but just the fact that everything's stored there.
Right.
That's actually
It's
even
right.
More.
It's harder to move. I mean, that's why, you know, like today, 20 years ago, moving from Windows PC to a Mac was a little bit difficult because you paid for all the software, you know, and the thought of repaying for all that software because you bought a new type of machine could be daunting. But today, you know, Mary Jo just said this, you know, mostly uses the web. I mean, well, you could, she doesn't want to, but she could move to a Mac or a Chromebook or even maybe even an iPad a lot more easily than might have been the case 20 years ago if she was going to move from
the PC to the Mac. So maybe Microsoft's strategy in that regard shouldn't be to put people on Windows, but to get people into Microsoft services.
I think that
is Microsoft's strategy.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, and right? Storage. So they don't, and that's why they don't care what platform.
Right, OneDrive and SharePoint.
Tied to this, it's funny you say that because let me see if I can just find this story. So the other day, this is tied to a story we're going to talk about later. But Microsoft came out with some announcement. It doesn't matter. But there's the graphic that they included was a woman holding a phone with an open computer and she's looking at something on her desk. And obviously she's like a small business owner, super busy with all her devices and everything. And, you know, in our world, Windows enthusiasts are all burned because that computer, which I actually had thought was like, you know, looking at it from a distance, I thought it was a Surface laptop, but it turns out it's a Mac. So these guys are all like, oh, why would they put a Mac in it? You know, they should have had like a Surface laptop. And it's like, guys, it's not 1999. Get over it. It's okay. Like Microsoft is completely cross-platform. They're agnostic. They don't care. You know, but people still are struggling with this. Like it's like some identity thing for them. They can't stand that this is not, it's not all Microsoft, you know. It's like, well, she's holding a phone. They don't make phones either. I mean, I know they make a Surface Duo, but.
Yeah. Old thoughts die hard. The whole, everything should be Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, Satya Nadella knows that, right?
We were talking about that on Sunday.
Yeah, well,
Because Christina Warren, who's works at Microsoft, loves Apple, loves Macs. And she says, it's Satya Nadella's Microsoft now. She doesn't, you know, and I said, yeah, if you pulled out that iPhone at a Steve Ballmer event, he'd have stomped on it. He would have, right?
Oh, yeah, no, right? I have brought Macs to Microsoft events and meetings and been called out for it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is many years ago now, right? I mean, today.
She acted like that, you know, no big at all. You know, I don't think
it isn't. It isn't.
And it shouldn't be, frankly.
It shouldn't be. No,
that's smart.
Remember
business.
A few years ago, I ran into Satya Nadella at the Microsoft office in Times Square, you know, when we could go places and stuff. And the first thing he said to me was, I saw you've switched to an Android phone. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And he's like, so how is it? Which Microsoft services do you use?
Which one did you get? I was looking at Android too.
Wow, how things have changed.
I was like, and he goes, can I see your home screen? And I'm like, sure. And he's like, oh, look at all the Microsoft apps. I'm like, yep.
Maybe it's no accident.
We're not using the Satya Nadella icon set, which would have been embarrassing.
I know.
There is
one.
Exactly.
There should be one.
There should be one. It, maybe it's no accident that Ballmer is now in the business of team sports, right? It's kind of the same idea, you know?
Yep.
That loyalty.
Honestly, it has to be really freeing. There were generations of Microsoft employees, executives, whatever, who, you know, some of them probably felt very strongly in the pro Microsoft, Windows first, Windows only kind of strategy. But, you know, for a while now, there has to have been just thousands and thousands of people there who were like, please, can I just use the tools I want to use? And now it's just like, obviously you can. Nobody cares.
Didn't Bill Gates say my kids will never have an iPad?
Yeah, that's right. It was an iPod.
They do now.
Yeah, I bet he does too.
Yeah,
I bet he does too. Devices actually.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think he was more worried about screen time than he was the iPad.
Probably.
Well, he didn't want them using Apple products.
There you go.
He was very, very specific about that. You know, I think it's healthy it's healthy from a competitive standpoint. And I've known people who worked at Microsoft who did this exact job where it's competitive analysis. That's one thing. And Jim Malton, we just came up recently. I think we talked, you know, one time he said, look, if I didn't work here, I'd be using a MacBook. Why can't we make things that are that good? That was a million years ago. You know, I mean, today, if you feel that way, you just get a MacBook. Nobody cares. I mean, I care. I think you're an idiot. But I mean, kidding. I'm using this new MacBook Pro.
Isn't it nice?
It's awesome.
It's amazing.
It is awesome. It really is. It's great.
Yeah.
So thank you to Intel for loaning to me. That was interesting.
You know,
wait a minute, it came from Intel. Campaign. No,
yeah.
No, you should tell. You should tell that story. Can you, or is that like an NDA thing?
Yeah,
how
no,
you
I can talk
this.
About it. Yeah, no, Intel contacted
me. Other reporters, they didn't offer me one.
Yeah, Intel offered people M1 Max.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So what Intel is doing is saying, like, look, we want you to just do the honest review thing that you do. You can here's a list of Intel Evo based PCs you can get for review purposes, right? And just compare it to an M1 based MacBook Pro. And so
that was a big mistake, I think.
Well, I mean, I don't want to ruin my the surprise coming
we'll
at the end of all this, but
okay.
No, but I will say this because I've said this before. In all of the discussions we've had about the M1 Mac and Max and all the stuff that Apple's done and how amazing it is and what does this mean to Intel and to the industry and to Windows users, you know, ultimately for Windows users, I honestly don't think it means that much. And I've said that before, and I think that's gonna. I still feel that way as I go. Like I said, the M1 based MacBook Pro is fantastic. It's an awesome computer. If I was spending my own money, I would spend $300 less and get a MacBook Air. But whatever. It's a great computer. It works great, but it's a Mac. It's still a Mac. I mean, and there are limitations with regards to peripherals you can use and the number of displays you can use if that's important to you, the amount of RAM you can add, and there's all this stuff. And yeah, Apple will fix this stuff over time, but it's not the slam dunk that I think a lot of people make it out to be. The MacBook Pro is pretty much silent, which is amazing. But is that like a game changer, or is that just kind of nice? You know. And is it nice enough to make you switch platforms? I don't, you know, for me, no. But, you know, maybe for some people, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it is nice, the people who notice it most are people who are using the Intel Macs moving to M1 Macs.
Especially if you're using a MacBook Air, which in the version I had before this had a fan system that wasn't attached to anything. So when you turn when the fan had to come on, it would make lots of sound, but it wasn't cooling anything down.
They're noisy.
I don't know what it was blowing. It was just...
No, they're noisy. And same with the MacBook Pros. Yeah. And if you started doing anything, including just surfing, it could get very loud. So I think those people are saying, this is amazing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But
and there are definitely speed benefits. I mean, Apple's comparing, you know, M1 to Intel on an Apple. I don't know about...
Yeah, no, that's right. And to me, I would say the most positive thing to me is not the fan. It's like an alacrity at which apps launch.
Snappy.
It's like they can't jump up fast enough. Yeah, the snappy display is almost the limitation on how fast it can be.
And battery life.
It is snappy.
You must love the battery life.
Battery life is good.
Yeah.
But I have lots of PCs that good battery life. This battery life is not a game changer for me, but I bet it is for Mac.
It is for me. I hardly ever plug it in. I mean, if I forget it at night.
No, the battery life is very good.
Yeah.
I wish I could measure
also,
it better.
Also, Paul, I got to say on battery life, I don't know how you do it, but you get battery life out of Windows PCs that I could never get.
Yeah.
Like you're always saying to me, I did
Notepad
like 10
is
hours
not
or
optimized,
12.
You need
no, I'm just always like, wait, I'm like getting 6 and you're getting 10 hours. Like that's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So one thing I should do with your, actually, that's interesting. Maybe someday I'll have you send me a battery report from your computer.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
You see what she's doing. Yeah.
Just compare it.
My Surface laptop, I might get like 5.5 hours.
So I wonder
if that
matches what the battery report says is your typical battery life, right? It would be interesting if it was off by 50% or something. I mean, I'm just curious.
It's off by 50%. I'm always like half of what Microsoft claims, even in their newly revised numbers where they don't say continuous video playback, but they say average daily use. I'm half of it easily.
Yeah. I mean, Windows makes it easy to measure it. It's not as easy on the Mac, but not to keep talking about
Apple. We should do that.
Apple's done. Apple does a better job of reporting real life battery life values.
But yeah, I thought Intel's PR strategy of doing this was
fascinating,
kind of, like risky.
But that's why I like it. And I said this to them. You know, I'm glad you're doing this because the silence, you know, it's not helpful.
It's taking it on.
It looked bad.
Apple has devoured past quarter of news cycle with processor stuff. I mean, it's like Apple. Why does it always have to be about Apple? I mean, they have done something incredible. So you know, what is Intel doing to respond to it? And I think Intel reminding the industry, hey, by the way, there are all these other benefits. Let's not forget about let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater or whatever. Because, yeah, I mean, the process is cool. It is cool. But just like everything else Apple does, there are pros and cons to this approach. Anyway, yeah, so I'm just, you know, whatever. I mean, Intel sent me a Mac.
That's kind of weird. But
you aren't the only one. They sent them to a lot of reporters.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, of course I'm not the only one. Yeah, no, right.
No, but I mean, I was just stunned when I started hearing people say this. I was like, wait, Intel sent you this?
So I'm talking to them again late this week, but we might actually have Ryan Schrout, you know, Schrout.
Mm-hmm. Our former host of This Week in Computer Hardware. He's now at Intel.
Yeah, so he was like a good source of mine before he went to Intel. He was a really good guy to talk to about hardware. Now he works for Intel, so he's completely compromised. No, he's a great guy. So hopefully him or somebody else will come on here someday. So.
Oh, that'd be great. I'm sure Ryan would
They can explain it themselves.
If Intel would let him, I'm sure Ryan would do that. Yeah. You know what? It's obvious. They're going to get much more attention for being gutsy enough to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree.
And then nobody's going to pay that much attention to the results because, but they'll get a lot of it.
I hope people pay attention to the results.
They'll get bonus points for saying, you know, and people will say in their heads, well, maybe there isn't that big a difference if Intel was willing to do that.
Or they'll remind them of things that people are glossing over, like peripheral compatibilities and things
Right. And that's a big part of the push. It's like, you know, and the other thing they raise is an issue I raised right up front when they did that initial M1 presentation where they said, you know, it's 80% faster than the latest Intel or the latest, best-selling PC, whatever. It's like, wait, I'm sorry, what are you comparing it to? I mean, you know, they're comparing it to a lot of nothing, so... that stuff still kind of bugs me, but, anyway, Intel has their own story to tell. I'm not going to tell it for them, but I will, you know, do what I do myself, which is just review things and just be honest about it, whatever. So I'm sure in some cases it's not going to be exactly what Intel wants. And that's what I said to them right up front. I said, just to be clear, delivering an Intel victory here.
I'm like, sure.
No, it's a risk. It's a calculated risk, right?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So it's a good. Some smart PR person did that. It's a good, smart PR move.
And they could use it, honestly. Intel's had a tough year, you know, and from a perception perspective, especially. So I like to see them on the offensive at the very least. Right. And that was the big thing I kind of communicated to them. I'm just happy you're doing this regardless of the outcome because you need to stand up for yourself.
That's interesting. And, you know, the mistake they made, I didn't know about this. They needed to really tell everybody. I think they were hoping you guys would go, you won't believe what Intel just did.
Right. Yeah, other people were telling me, and they're like, are you getting one? And I'm like, no, but I'm not really the right audience for this.
No, they want benchmarkers.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, actually, so that it's interesting you say that. So one of the things I really liked in what they communicated to me was that they're not super interested in benchmarks.
Yeah, well,
and that's probably smart. Perfect. Neither am I. No, because benchmarks don't match reality.
Right.
I mean, I'm more interested in real world evaluation and comparison.
Well, and they don't fare that well in the benchmarks. So,
yeah, but Qualcomm doesn't fare well in benchmarks compared to
but it's how people use
an iPhone. Right? But has anyone ever picked up a modern Android phone and be like, man, this thing's really slow? Like they're tremendously fast. They're just as fast as iPhones in real world use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you okay? You got something in your throat?
No.
Paul and I used to talk all the time on the show about how we wished Microsoft would be more on the offensive
that's right.
Apple was doing a lot of stuff against them. And their attitude, though, was like, you know, we're taking the high road. I'm like, guys, no one cares about the high road, right?
You're going to take the high road right into irrelevancy. So congratulations on that.
Take the low road. You'll all get to Skylanding.
Well, no, I mean, you got to meet the enemy where they're fighting you, realistically.
Yeah.
So,
Microsoft plots. I won't. I'll let you finish the sentence. I like it though.
I was going to say plots.
I like the story. It's like
I like the story. It's a Microsoft plot.
What are they plotting?
Like the beginning of a Star Wars movie. It's like the scroll. Microsoft is plotting.
Plotting.
Yeah. So tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern, so this is on February 4th, Microsoft is holding a virtual event with Satya Nadella called Reimagine the Employee Experience. And we don't know yet like what exactly they're going to announce tomorrow, but I took a stab at it because I was watching various people at Microsoft tweet about this, and I'm like, I think I can put together what they're going to announce. So I started watching hashtags that people were using, and they were talking about things like Project Cortex, which is the knowledge management technologies at Microsoft. You can bet Teams. I was guessing also, you know, like things like workplace analytics. I'm like, what are all the things that they have that could be combined somehow into something that would be about employee experience? Then I did what I always do, went to the career site, typed in the words employee experience, and voila, there was the answer. So wow. There's a lot of job postings inside the Microsoft career site for them building what they call a product suite designed to address the fundamental shift in how people work, building their careers, finding meaning in their workplace. And it talks a lot about how people need to be able to more easily onboard, educate, and create more useful employee profiles, coach their employees, mentor their employees. So my guess is tomorrow there'll be some kind of a suite of things that they announce that'll be all about this, improving the employee experience.
LinkedIn? Teams?
Yeah, LinkedIn for sure, yeah. Right? Teams makes sense. LinkedIn makes sense, right? Microsoft right. Learn, right? All the things they have around learning and learning apps and learning technologies. I mean, last year they announced this idea of bringing a learning app into Microsoft Teams, wow. And then they never actually shipped it. So I'm like, oh, maybe they're going to ship that thing as part of this.
But that's for schools more, right? That's for education.
No, it's more for like, you know, you want training. Your employees when you start yeah. them out at a company training. To like, okay, we want you to yeah. read this, and this about yeah. the about what we do and our company.
Oh my God,
that kind of stuff, right?
You guys don't work for actual companies, really, but
we don't.
If you did,
well, we don't have someone making introductory videos about the company. That's for sure.
I have to run through, and they're just awful. They're almost as bad as slide strips in school. They're done in Flash with yeah. crap music, production music. Yeah. Training all the time for the radio company yeah. that I work for.
EduCorp. Yeah. It's yeah. the company of the future.
You are friends, drink. And it's just, I can totally, every company yeah. in the, we have to do it. We have, you know, yeah. training, sexual harassment training. We have employee yeah. handbook. Yeah. Every company has to do this. There's state and federal sure. regulations. Mm-hmm. A platform to make this better would be great.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's an
maybe. No. They're going to announce it tomorrow. Yes, we'll see.
I know.
That kind of would make yeah. sense.
It would.
I feel so like this is I'm sorry.
I was going to say the speakers are Satya Nadella and Jared Spataro, who's the Microsoft 365 chief, right? Okay. So you can kind of put together, okay, it's about Microsoft 365, right? Yeah. Cortex, Teams, like you can guess, but what we don't know is the details of what that actually looks like and when it's right. coming and all that, right? Right.
Yeah. HR help would be more than welcome.
That would be
in
good.
Most companies.
Yes, yeah. It would be. Yeah,
it's not fun.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Well, and the world has just changed, right? And you know, this is the thing. I was surprised by this when I first read it. But you know, a year ago, March, they were saying, you know, we're never going back to the way it was before. You know, even when this is solved, yeah. we're not going back. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like we stop everything we're doing and go back the way it was. You know, this has yep. triggered real change that will be permanent. And I think that yeah. this announcement, whatever it is probably going to be less talk about that fact and more action about what we can do about it, you know, with technology mm-hmm. to embrace the reality of it, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we'll see tomorrow. We're going to reimagine the employee experience tomorrow.
We sure are.
You know what I wondered when I heard this too? Like right now, the whole, what do they call it? What do they call it? Experience management platforms like Qualtrics. Those are all yeah. like the rage right now. Qualtrics was part of SAP and they just spun out with an IPO. you know, I'm like, maybe Microsoft just wants a part of that whole like mind share, market share of an employee experience, employee management kind of.
Is there some kind of a magic quadrant they could be part of? Or
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is
whatever
one.
Whatever that stuff is.
Yep. But yeah, it should be pretty interesting. 9 a.m. Eastern virtual event. Anybody can watch. You don't have to register or anything. You'll just be able to watch it.
Why would they just hold this until Ignite?
So they must have a lot of other news for Ignite, I guess, right?
9 a.m. Eastern?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know.
Yeah.
Just read about it when you get up.
Yeah. You know what? We'll have some stories for you that you can
I'll watch in bed. I'll get a cup of tea.
Exactly.
You'll be browsing dog and kitten videos on YouTube in no time after this thing starts.
Yeah. Evil John, who in our chat room apparently works in HR, says onboarding is such a nightmare.
Oh, man.
This is one of the problems I'm attacking. If you think it's bad for the employees, it's 10 times as bad for the HR people. Yeah. The problem is businesses don't generally invest in HR tech.
Yeah.
So, and he says, you know what? This isn't where you would, Ignite is not where you would do it. You do it because you want to reach HR people. You want to,
I mean, they've got LinkedIn, right? They've barely touched LinkedIn, and
this
they haven't
a big
really integrated
for
them
LinkedIn.
In, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, LinkedIn's got to be in here. Right?
Yeah. Every time you say something like that, does Frank Shaw threaten you? Because I can't mention LinkedIn without getting a
phone
call or a text.
So Microsoft doesn't want that to be the narrative, right? Like, they want it to be like, we bought LinkedIn. It was a great buy. We've been doing a lot with them. But that's not really true, right? The way they've managed LinkedIn is they've left LinkedIn to run itself. And in terms of profits and revenues, that has been very good for Microsoft, right? Like they said on the earnings call, LinkedIn's contributing, blah, 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 right? But in terms of the original roadmap they showed when they first bought LinkedIn and had all these plans to like integrate LinkedIn's graph with the Microsoft graph and all, none of that has happened. That has not happened at all. Right. I mean, LinkedIn doesn't even run on Azure yet, guys. Come on.
Come on. What is it running on? Amazon?
Is it running on Amazon? I can't remember what. No, they're running on their own data center.
Oh, okay.
They're running on their own servers and everything. And they're in the midst of switching it to Azure, to be fair.
I honestly think LinkedIn is the last decent social network.
That's what you said the last time.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a measure of its lack of success.
By the way, you can just end it right there. It absolutely is. I mean, it's not lack of success. It's a specific market they're trying to address.
Yeah.
So by nature, it's not going to be as big as Facebook. Yeah.
Which I think is great, honestly.
Yes.
It's very specific, right? It's got a specific
quality
like,
through
we're
obscurity.
For people looking for jobs.
Is that what it is?
Well, but that's the thing. It's moved more in towards a social network now. People
it
put
has.
Blog-like posts,
feed,
videos.
Right?
They're doing kind of TikTok-style videos. Oh, look, I just got a congratulations on being 14 years at Premier Networks. Thank you very much. On LinkedIn. I just logged LinkedIn just to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just to see.
No, I agree. I think there's a lot of potential to do more with it if they want to do more with it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I love it, actually. I'm not looking for work. Maybe that's why I love it. I don't have to care because I got a job.
Going back to HR too, besides LinkedIn, Microsoft actually has a bunch of HR technology that's part of Dynamics 365 that almost nobody knows about really. And I think it would be a good time to try to integrate that in here too, maybe, or at least, you know, set the stage for doing that at some point. So they have all these HR and learning assets at Microsoft that I feel like they could really put more front and center if they wanted to. Maybe this is the start of that.
Hmm. Okay. LinkedIn bought lynda.com, right? At one point. So that content is not called that anymore.
It's called LinkedIn Learning.
LinkedIn Learning.
And it's a lot of it is unchanged Lynda content, and then they've added a lot more. Yeah. They've been a sponsor. It's good. Yeah, you know, I think this might be a big LinkedIn announcement in conjunction with Teams.
And maybe they're going to spin it off.
Jeff Bezos is the new CEO of LinkedIn.
That's why he's stepping down.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So excited to welcome Jeff.
1 million.
Well, I think you could say the same thing about Microsoft's acquisition of GitHub, that they haven't done a lot with it. And yet I think it's it's definitely done well under Microsoft, right?
I feel different about GitHub.
But I don't know that there was any big promise of integration with GitHub, right? Buying GitHub to me almost seemed like a gift to the developer community, to someone who would be the right steward for that thing and do right by it. LinkedIn, like Mary Jo said, she's right. There was a lot of talk right up front. This is, we're going to integrate it. You're going to see LinkedIn data is going to be everywhere throughout Microsoft 365, especially Office applications and so forth. The graph.
Yeah,
and there's a little bit of that, I guess. I mean,
a little.
I'm sure if you went to Microsoft Outlook and started typing in a name, you could, you know, get some LinkedIn data there. But
I feel
nothing
like
that couldn't have been done otherwise.
No, but you know what? One challenge is, and I think Microsoft's done a lot to try to police this, but you can go into LinkedIn and set up a lot of fake stuff, right? Like you can set up a fake profile. People are always like for jokes. Liking me for certain skills for things I don't do at all, you know.
Oh, it's just
and if that somehow gets it, no. Think if that data somehow got into the graph, right? Like who at my company knows about making peanut butter sandwiches? Oh, Mary Jo Foley does, right? That's the trick. Like you have to be able to somehow keep this data set clean because it's not like your company global access list. It's not like that, right? It's not your address book. It's people putting in their own information and no one's really verifying it, right? If I say I went to Harvard or whatever, no one's verifying that. So.
Do you like peanut butter sandwiches? Is that a thing?
I do. I love them, actually.
Okay, so that was
do you prefer them with jelly or do you like
them? No, I prefer them without jelly.
Mayonnaise, bananas, just peanut butter alone.
That's a good fluffernutter. You're from New England. You must have had
fluffernutter. I do love fluffernutter.
It's marshmallow fluff and peanut butter.
It's so good. I could just eat that.
Fluffernutter. The food you eat when you've given up.
Elvis. Yeah. When Elvis gave up, it was peanut butter, bananas, and mayonnaise sandwiches.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah, really? I wouldn't eat it, but he loved it apparently. Yeah,
wow.
That's disgusting.
thank you very much. Are you going to eat that?
Yeah. Anyway, I think there's a lot of things they could do with LinkedIn if they want to, and maybe they're just biding their time before they do more integrating it, or maybe they will never do that. I don't know.
Well. I can assure you that this conversation is going to trigger another communique, so see what happens.
Frank, we love you. Come on.
Frank. I'm sorry.
Stop making sourdough bread for a second. Sighed heavily. Took out his phone. It's like,
Frank,
I'm tired of you two with the
souls. If you don't follow Frank on Twitter just to see his bread pictures and
really?
Instagram.
You weren't joking? Yeah. He's all into the sourdough?
No. And he's an excellent baker.
He's branched out from sourdough, but
there's this. I made sourdough crumpets this morning.
Made them again.
I made again. Yeah.
No, you told us the recipe.
It's a bad habit.
Is it a daily thing?
It's a bad habit.
Do you feel like the little holes? I'll fill up with butter.
Yes, they do.
So that you bite into it, and it's like
one of those butter
gum things that has a liquid center.
And a little strawberry jam just to give it
nice.
A
nice. That
touch
sounds
it.
Excellent.
Oh,
just touch as well.
Nice. Sounds good.
So, Frank, if you want the recipe, just hit me up.
Come by.
I think it's actually from King Arthur Flour. I think it's a pretty common recipe.
They have good recipes.
Especially for, and a lot of sourdough stuff, actually. Mm-hmm. What else? I've lost track of the notes here. What are we talking about? Lots of mobile app improvements
coming to Microsoft 365.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I agree with you, Paul. This was kind of a confusing blog post or two.
This was actually emblematic of the problem with Microsoft 365. And by the way, a few days earlier, they did an all up. Here's what we did during January post. This was just for mobile apps.
Yeah,
it is a freaking mess. And I know you have a tip or whatever at the end that will hopefully address this mess in some way. Yeah. So I don't want to get on top of that. But anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, Microsoft has Office and various Office apps on iOS and Android. This post that Microsoft did this week was talking about some of the new things that are coming for those platforms specifically. But what made this hard to kind of pull together was some of these things already exist. Some don't. Some of them are rebranding of things. Some of them are things they announced 2 years ago that are just being rolled out now.
Also, like the Edge roadmap thing that you pointed out, it's like here's 101 things we're doing.
Yeah. Right.
Throw it up in the air and then we'll publish it in whatever it lands, whatever order it lands in, you know?
So I tried to pick off, I tried to pick off like the three or four things I thought were kind of cool or interesting or new. So one of them is something Microsoft showed. You're going to remember this at Build 2019. Remember they showed, I think it might've even been the keynote where they had this woman like talking to her phone, like change my meeting room to blah, 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 change the time from 3 to 2 and then pick up my kids at daycare and da, da, da. And I'm like, what are they trying to show? And what they were trying to show there was that they were bringing conversational AI and more of a like turn by turn experience to Cortana. And that would be your true personal assistant on your mobile device. And it was going to be using technology they bought when they bought Semantic Machines. Then we never heard anything about that for the past couple of years, right? It was like, yeah, we showed you guys that and it doesn't exist yet. I would periodically check in. I'm like, do we have that yet? No. Okay. So they said this week that that kind of an experience is going to start rolling out first for Outlook on iOS for email, calendar, and search in the coming weeks. So this is finally going to start happening. It seems like it's going to be a gradual rollout, but people who have iPhones are going to be able to test this out first. If you have Cortana on your iPhone and you use Outlook Mobile, you'll be able to start talking to it more as a way to do things like change the time of your meeting, add participants, you know, add attachments to a document that's going to be distributed for a meeting, that kind of stuff. You're sighing.
This is to me central to the problem with Microsoft 365 and keeping track of the updates that they announced because I don't even remember the features anymore, but last March they announced the transition of Office 365 for consumers to Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm. They announced a bunch of new features, some of which, by the way, still not rolled out today. Here we are almost a year later. And you lose track because every month, literally, there are hundreds of new features across Microsoft 365 services, web apps, mobile apps on both Android and iOS and iPad, actually, and Windows and sometimes Mac desktop apps as well. So you just mentioned a new Cortana feature coming to Outlook for iOS, one of the 17 different Outlooks. And one of the several different places where this technology will one day appear. And it is coming, you said, in the coming, months or weeks?
Weeks. I guess. In the coming weeks. Yep.
You know, this is the trouble, right? I mean, there you go. And of course, the natural reaction to that statement about this new feature coming for Outlook for iOS is going to be from the, you know, the other 50% of people of Android are like, okay, when's it coming on Android?
When are we getting it? I know. Yep. I already asked.
And the answer could be, it's already there. We don't know. Or... Yeah. Maybe we
one day
it some,
in the coming months, in the coming years. Yeah, I know.
It's hard,
I agree
it's
with
really
you.
Hard to keep track of this stuff.
I know. No. And then you mix in like this next thing I'm going to talk about where they start rebranding things too. Right. So this rebrand isn't too hard to understand. Office Lens, you know, the app you can use for scanning is going to be rebranded to Microsoft Lens. Okay. That's pretty straightforward. Right. But then they're going to add a bunch of new features that are coming soon. Whatever soon means in this context, right? So one of those features is you're going to be able to use Lens to create short video content that you can integrate into Teams, chat, right? Right.
I'm sorry.
Because they couldn't buy TikTok? I don't know. Like,
But what's the point of Microsoft Lens? Isn't Microsoft Lens designed to bring photographs of things into...
No, you're thinking... I think you're thinking of PhotoSynth. Are you thinking of that?
Or Google Lens.
Like you take a picture of a receipt.
Google Lens.
Yeah, take a picture of a receipt.
This is Microsoft's version.
They call it Lens, too?
They do. Yeah. Or a whiteboard.
This might actually predate Google Lens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you could take a picture of a whiteboard or a receipt.
This was a Windows Phone app, you know, back in the day.
It was, and it was great.
Oh, it did then. It for sure did, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but so you actually haven't hit on the central complexity of Microsoft Lens, which is this. There is a Microsoft Lens app, and it's on Android and iOS. But Microsoft Lens is also built into many other apps, including OneDrive, at least, probably Outlook, OneNote, certainly, Office, the Office app, it's in there.
Probably Teams, right? It's probably
almost certainly Teams. So are there differences between the implementation of Lens across those multiple apps?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. Nope, I don't know. And now you're, but now you're going to add short video content to Teams chat.
Of course you are.
Right. But
they're
I don't know if that, right. That's what I said. I was like, it's TikTok envy, right?
Yeah.
No, but to your point, that's a good question. Like, does that mean that Lens, the version of Lens that's in OneDrive, does that also get this ability to create short video content and embed it somewhere? Or is it just
And if it doesn't, I mean, honestly, kudos to Microsoft for adding another layer of complexity to something that was already too complex to begin with, because now not only do they have 100 updates every month, but they have different levels of updates to the same solution in different places. That's hilarious.
I know. And they're all called the same thing, like we talked about with Outlook, right? There's so many implementations of Outlook. When someone says to you, this is coming to Outlook, you have to say, which Outlook do you mean?
Microsoft 365 is like this. It's wonderful, obviously, and it's a great value and all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. But because, again, I don't complain anymore. But it is a crazy.
What happened to you, Paul?
I'm settling on the right mixture of drugs at this point. It's so Microsoft, right? To meet every need in every place imaginable and create this really complex matrix of features. It's they're the anti-Apple, you know, when you think about it. I mean, if all it takes is one person out in the world that says, you know, I could really use some Lens features in Groove Music. They'd be like, all right, let's add it. What the hell? Somebody wants it. Like, they just don't seem to be able to say no, you know? I find it complex, personally.
But. Yeah, it's complex. But here's another one that was, I thought, you had to really read into this to figure out what it was. So on the Microsoft 365 roadmap, it says, Microsoft is bringing Office to iPad. And I'm like, Wait, what? I'm like, Office is already on iPad, isn't it? Right?
Does it mean the Office app?
Yes, it means the Office mobile app, which is the combined Word, Excel, and PowerPoint thing that I love so much on my Android phone and that I use on the web.
To have on mobile.
You're going to have to explain it to me. Isn't it just a launcher for the other full programs?
No.
It's not. It contains it all inside it.
It's like mini versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint that they don't have every bell and whistle, right? But they let you do most of the things you need to do.
There you go. There's another, I'm almost OCD. I want to know. If you were to compare the version of Word mobile for iOS, let's say, with the Word component of the Office app on iOS, are there differences?
I know. There probably are.
I actually don't know. Probably are, I guess, because otherwise, wouldn't the Office app be humongous unless there's a lot of redundant code in there? I don't know.
Yeah. So that thing, Office Mobile or whatever you want to call it, is coming to iPad, but we don't know when. It just says it's coming to the Apple App Store, but it doesn't say even in the coming weeks or anything. It just says it is happening.
I didn't even see that one, but I spiraled when I read this thing.
Yeah, I was like, okay, sure. Anyway, if you care about Office apps on iOS and Android, you should go and look up Paul's articles and my articles on this. You should click on Microsoft's article.
Yeah, don't read my article. I gave up. This is so confusing because there's so much to it, right? And it's not, they don't go like product by product. It's kind of just all over the map. If you care about Cortana, by the way, there's a lot of Cortana announcements in there. Microsoft Search stuff. But I mean, God, it gets really down. Like micro tasks is what I called out specifically. They talk about these micro tasks they're adding to various apps. Office, the Office app, and Teams are getting quick forms and polls. Okay, cool. That's fine. They actually called out a daily weather forecast in Outlook mobile calendar. Guys, come on. Like, Outlook on the desktop probably got a calendar. I mean, not a calendar, like a little daily weather thing, like, 200 years ago? I mean, I just add it and don't talk about it.
I know.
Seriously, a weather forecast in Outlook? This is the one iota of efficiency I need in my life that I don't have to go to a weather app now.
You know what they need? They need an aka.ms link that has a giant matrix that shows you Outlook, every version of Outlook that's possible, and along the top, every platform that it has, and check marks or dates in those boxes about when those things will get it.
It would be
Microsoft,
amazing.
You can have my idea. You are welcome.
Yeah, a feature matrix for Outlook, and then what you would discover is that every version of Outlook has hundreds of features, and not any one of them has all of the features.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, I like the idea of feature parity to the extent that that's possible across all the platforms. That's a really nice goal, but it doesn't make sense on every platform, right? You don't have every single feature that's Word or Windows in Outlook, right?
All right. You mentioned iOS. What's it called? The conversational AI technology for Outlook for iOS. Come on.
Yes.
Come on. How could that not? Could you at least give us some, not you, Mary Jo, I'm sorry, Microsoft, give us some idea when this might appear on Android at least? And what about other versions of Outlook? Like, why would you just announce this and leave that hanging?
Yeah.
Again, Microsoft.
I thought the conversational AI thing could have been its own post almost, right? Because I think this is a big deal, right? Like, I like the idea of being able to, like, not be typing on my phone and being able to manipulate my calendar and add recipients to things and stuff. That's awesome, right? That's fantastic. Yep. That's what a productivity assistant should be used for. Right?
Yes. And not that you should be doing this kind of thing while you're driving, but people are going to.
No.
It's the type of thing you would do driving or just out in the world with an actual assistant, right, on the phone saying, I need an appointment with this person at this time and I'll make sure Bob is in the meeting or whatever. It is exactly the conversation you would have, but now you're having it with a
Cortana,
you know, digital assistant.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is a natural use for this.
Yeah, it's great because it actually shows people how and why Microsoft changed what Cortana is, right? Like a lot of people see me say, Cortana is now a personal digital assistant. And those words just, you're kind of like, yeah, whatever that means. But when you see these examples, then you realize there is a real reason for this to still exist and it could be very useful, right?
And I would say in this case, when Microsoft announced, remember they at one point had a Cortana app on Android and iOS. And then at one point they said, well, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to integrate Cortana capabilities in individual apps. And everyone's like, oh, get rid of Cortana, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But I this is where you want this functionality, right? You are literally making a meeting, you know, or whatever.
Smarter.
And that's, you know, that's where you go in your mind. You're like, well, I need to do this in Outlook.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. It does.
I think so. Unlike everything else with Microsoft 365, which if I have not mentioned it yet, overly complex.
Yeah, it's a lot. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Good, because I'm tired. No, I'm just kidding.
You need Cortana to help do your tap.
Yeah, Cortana. What should I drink before I go to bed so I sleep properly?
You need Barracuda. Let's take a little break and we'll come back with more. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. You know that name. I'm sure you do. It's one of the best known names in security. Got a new threat analyzer tool I want to tell you about right now. And this really comes from the realization that protecting yourself, especially against email takeover and conversation hijacking and ransomware, requires kind of an ongoing effort, a layered approach. You can't just fix one thing and then figure, we're good. This is really where hackers, they're like sharks. They never stop moving, right? They're always looking for the weakest link in your security configuration. And the first place they look is email security because it's often poorly done and it is a rich target. Your goal, should you choose to accept it, find those email vulnerabilities first before the bad guys so you can defend against cyber attacks. That's what Barracuda is offering with their new threat analyzer tool. 13 different types of email threats they have identified, from malware, the traditional, you know, attachment, to the latest spear phishing, account takeover, conversation hijacking. It takes many layers, at least a few layers of security working in concert to protect you against all of these threats. There's no one fixes it all solution. And if you're not fully protected, the bad guys are going to find their way in. They're going to figure out where your vulnerabilities lie, and they're going to go right after them. That's literally all they spend their time on. When they find that gap in your security, they just need to choose the right threat type, customize it to get into your system. Maybe say it's, you know, oh, this is the boss. And if that gets through, it can cost you millions of dollars. More, maybe importantly, it can cost you your reputation. So this is really a challenge. And if you work in this field, you know this. Hundreds of highly targeted, personalized threat variants emerging daily. They're spear phishing. They're aimed at you and your company and your organization and your employees. And there are so many different kinds of on-prem and cloud-based email systems. It can really be challenging to say, we've locked it all down. We know what the gaps are. We know what the vulnerabilities are, and we've fixed it. That's why you need this. And it's free. I want you to try it. It's simple. It's fast to use. Barracuda's Threat Analyzer. If you go to Barracuda.com/windows, B-A-R-R-A, Barracuda, C-U-D-A, just like the fish, .com/windows. It's really pretty simple. A few multiple choice questions about your email security setup. It shouldn't take you more than a couple of minutes. You will get a free customized report telling you the threat types you're most vulnerable to. You'll get custom recommendations on how to strengthen your defenses against those attacks. It's free. It's easy to use. It's kind of almost the least you could do, but it's a great place to start right now to take this seriously. And you should. It is a huge threat. Barracuda's December spear phishing report found that 12% of all spear phishing attacks are one of these 13 business email compromise. That's up. 12% is up from 7% the year before. Why are those attacks growing? Because they work, right? Bad guys go where the money is. They're going to do the thing that is most easy. According to the FBI's most recent internet crime report, business email compromise attacks led to over $3.5 billion in losses. The government of Puerto Rico, perfect example, lost $2.6 million in a single attack last year. One attack. You watch Shark Tank, you know Barbara Corcoran? You probably heard this story, right? Her employees, this is a very common one. You send an invoice to a company, and if it's a big enough company, the comptroller or the CFO or the bookkeeper gets it and pays it. They don't spend a lot of time verifying it. Well, that's what happened. Her employees fell for an impersonation attack. They paid a fake invoice worth almost $400,000. They wired it. Now, they were lucky. They figured it out in time, and they did recover the money. Doesn't always happen. A big school district in Texas were making fraudulent payments over a whole month. I don't know. It looks good to me. Pay it. $2.3 million they lost. That's just one of the 13 ways they can attack. Email compromise. Does your email security protect against that and all the other attacks? Barracuda Threat Analyzer. Try it today. It's free. It takes a couple of minutes. You'll get a full report showing exactly what you need to do to secure your email. Barracuda is the best in the business. This is a very valuable tool, and there's no reason not to try it. Do it right now. You can do it while you're listening. Barracuda.com/windows. Find out where those hidden threats lie in your particular email configuration. Barracuda Threat Analyzer, barracuda.com/windows. We thank Barracuda for supporting Windows Weekly. Thank you, by the way, for if you use that address, then they know you saw it here. So that's very helpful. Paul Thurrott, Xbox time.
Yeah. Let's see. What's going on here? We're a couple
Christina
of
Warren
February.
Told me, by the way, because I mentioned I was having a hard time getting a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X. She said, oh, you should have told me. I got a lot of them.
I said, what
do you mean? No. And I thought, oh, maybe Microsoft gave her a bunch. She said, no. I figured out. I'm not gaming it, but I just figured out. You know, apparently she's really into sneakers. And and she goes to this site where you bid on sneakers and stuff. And she used the same mad skills to get her perfect off-white Jordans. to get PlayStation 5s, and she said, "Oh, if you just told me, I could have got you one." I was like,
"That's incredible."
I don't know what her trick was. I'm still going to Walmart every week.
Did you get any more?
I'm an idiot. So what am I missing out? Xbox time.
Just pick up a George Foreman grill if they don't have a PlayStation 5.
I know. I'm going to get an Instapot. I have 5, but why not? Get another one.
You're like, well, I'm here.
I'm
going to get something.
I did, actually. I ordered. I thought I was getting a Series X, but I somehow got the controller and not the game machine. It was so embarrassing.
Boy. it's smaller than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's really tiny. They said, you didn't come get it, so we put it back on the shelf. Thank you.
That would be disappointing.
Yeah, it was all on a card. I thought it was, I don't know.
Let me jump to that then, because the bigger news here, I guess, is back in, I want to say it was November, and I think it was the CTO of Xbox, if that makes any sense at all. But somebody from Microsoft, someone high up, said, look, we're going to be constrained on supplies through at least April. You know, That's been the talk ever since. I think they said it again in the conference call, if I'm not mistaken. But Microsoft head of investor relations, Mike Spencer, told the New York Times separately that the new consoles, Xbox Series X and S, will now likely be constrained at least through June, which is mid-year, obviously, and also the conclusion of Microsoft's fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So that's not great. What's interesting is, Xbox had its best ever quarter in, you know, that December quarter, with over $5 billion in revenues.
Well, they sold as many as they could make, basically, right?
You have to think they could have sold 2, 3, 4 times as many.
Right.
You know, whatever the number is. But, yeah, it's going to be a while, unfortunately.
Sony's did all right, too, right?
Yeah, Sony has the same problems. Now, the interesting thing is, and I'm trying to, it says here who it was. Before this announcement from Sony today, the estimate on PlayStation 5 sales was 6 million.
Wow.
Through the end of 2020, and Microsoft selling about half that, so 3 million units of Series X and S combined. Sony actually came out with their quarterly results. They also had the best ever quarter, and the best ever quarter of PlayStation was, I think it was 8.8 something billion. So, you know, a third again, as big as Microsoft.
Wow.
But they sold, what was the number? 4.5 million units. So not quite six. So Microsoft is probably somewhere 2 to 3 million, I think would be the accurate guess as to what they actually sold, but.
And that's, you know, that's a big year for video games. How many they could make.
Yeah. And then there's like Nintendo, which apparently has no problem making or selling anything.
Because they have an old chip in the Switch. It's not, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, they, you know, 80 million units altogether, right, from the beginning of the release of that.
I bought it because I couldn't get a Series X, so I bought a Switch. That's probably why.
Yeah. They sold 11.5 million units just in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know. But the Switch is big enough that they're getting into that historic part of the market. You know, like we'll see where they land. But right. For, you know, to so people can kind of put it in perspective, Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, right, which are now two generations old, both sold in the high 80 million units range. 3DS, 76 million units. I think
3DS is still selling.
No, but that's where they landed.
Okay. I get it. Historically.
So the Nintendo consoles that have still outsold the Switch include the Wii, of course, 101 million units.
You're getting close.
Game Boy across all devices, 119 million, and DS, 154 million.
Wow.
Crazy.
But I have to think the Switch is as successful as the 3DS.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So it's just a
They followed up Wii with Wii U, which did poorly, right? Switch has put them right back at the top.
3DS sold amazing. For years. I mean, it's only recently stopped.
Yeah.
So they sold that for a long time.
Yeah. So that's a big, you know, that's big. And then in less good news, and so I'm going to discuss this in the tip of the week a little bit as well. But the news part of it is Google had an internal team called Stadia Games and Entertainment.
They brought in a big shot. People. We talked about it when it happened.
Yes. And her name was, do you remember? I don't think I have my story. The person who ran it has left the company.
Yeah.
So Stadia continues, but Google is not going to develop games in-house anymore. Now, you remember the way Microsoft and Sony do this is they have game studios that make games, right? You don't actually, well, that's not true. Well, no, it is true. Back in the day, Microsoft Flight Simulator came from Microsoft, you know, I guess, or who knows what that team was. But now, you know, we know there's a studio behind it, right? There's some studio. It has some name, whatever. It's in some location. Both Sony and Microsoft have invested heavily in studios.
Jade Raymond.
That's right.
Yes.
And Google has not. You know, Google brought people in-house to make these games. And I don't, I'm assuming they shipped at least a few of them, but When I looked at Stadia, I only saw one game that was a Stadia exclusive. And by the way, it was actually pretty good, as I recall. But they have discovered what everyone else already knows who's in this market. It's like, it's hard to make games. Yeah. You know, it's hard.
It takes a long time, costs a lot of money, and there's no guarantees.
Yeah. But man, it's what a tough hit. Right after the holiday.
Yeah.
Talk about throwing a little wrench of uncertainty into things.
That's the problem.
And of course, Google has a rich history, like Microsoft does, by the way, of killing off products and services that people seem to like. And, you know, of course, now people go, you know, the countdown until they kill Stadia. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I don't know. I don't know what to make of this.
I mean, it's just the indie stuff. They're still going to sell. You know, Cyberpunk 2077 and all the other stuff. Yeah,
I will say from a perspective of like quality and quantity of games, and then also quantity of places where you can play those games, right? Which is a key thing, I think, for cloud services. Stadia actually is good.
Yeah, I want them to keep going with it.
Just
because they give up the independent dev doesn't mean.
Right.
Well, but that's the problem with Google.
What you want on Stadia is the new Assassin's Creed game.
Right.
You want the games. You know, I don't think anyone has jumped on Stadia because I can't wait to see what Google does with games. You know, like I don't think that was the thing. But anyway, I'm going to dive into this a little bit more in the tips thing, like I said, because it is this type of event, unfortunately, triggers a very predictable response from the community. And I just kind of want to address that. But, you know, like I said, we'll get to that. And then just real quick, there is, it's February, like I said, and there are some new Game Pass games, including Wolfenstein Youngblood, which is, I guess, like the third game in the modern Wolfenstein game series, which is actually very good. I didn't finish it, but I got quite a bit of a way through it. And then Falconeer is supposed to be a really good game. That's kind of an open world air combat game. Jurassic Park game, if you're into dinosaurs. Some good stuff. So
cool.
Starting tomorrow and then again next week, there'll be several new games across what? Console, Windows, PC, and what are we calling it? Android, cloud, I don't know. Streaming, whatever that is. So, yeah.
Nice.
All right.
Okay. Fine. That's the entire Xbox segment?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank God.
I heard that.
Oh, brother.
You
know what? You know who sent Paul a note when Google killed the internal game dev?
Well,
who did, Paul?
Who?
Me.
Someone from Google.
Oh, did you say okay. I told you so?
Yeah.
No, I just said, did you just see this? What the heck?
What?
You called it.
Yeah.
No, he called it because I remember way back in the day, he's like, this isn't going to last. Google's not going to keep on doing this. It's like short-lived.
To give them credit, I mean, honestly, if you look at what they've done to the service over the past year, it's a lot like Microsoft 365. They've actually added a bunch of features. There are some weird things they don't do. Like you still can't stream to the new Google TV Chromecast for some reason. But I don't know. You know, their controller's good. Their scheme for latency is good. You can use other controllers if you want. It works with lots of different devices. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit more. I just threw in this thing about revenues or earnings from other companies because it's interesting to put this in perspective with Microsoft. Remember last year we were talking about Microsoft, $43.1 billion in revenues in the yeah, calendar last year, yeah. calendar quarter of 2020.
Yeah.
Nice. Since then, Apple first, then Amazon, Google, Samsung, and others, I'm sure, have all come up with earnings. And like, honestly, of the companies I just mentioned, Microsoft had the smallest revenues, which is crazy. Samsung, $55.3 billion in revenues.
Is that, but the Samsung isn't a lot of businesses. Was that just?
That's right. Yep.
Is and that so the whole bigger thing?
Yeah, that's all of it.
Oh,
but
okay.
The two big businesses for them are kind of interesting, right? So mobile, obviously,
yeah.
But also displays, and their primary display customer is Apple.
Yeah.
And Apple had, you know, the biggest quarter in the history of the planet Earth, I think. Well, until Amazon. But anyway, so that was a big chunk of their stuff. You know, Google, $57 billion, roughly. 81% of that from advertising. So that's something interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me, you know, because Google's revenue share from advertising has been going down. It used to be in the very high 90s. And someone asked me this morning, what does this look like compared to the same quarter a year ago? So I looked it up. And a year ago, it was 81%. So they've kind of hung at that level, I guess, now for a year. That's kind of interesting. Apple blew everyone away the other day, whenever that was, earlier this week, I think, or last week, whenever that was. $111 billion, the first $100 billion quarter for Apple. Every single business unit they have had double-digit revenue gains year over year, which is crazy. And you would have thought that was going to be the end of it, but then Amazon dropped a bomb yesterday, $126 billion in revenues. What is going on in this world? I mean, COVID.
The pandemic.
Crazy. This is like a who's, this is, these are like the biggest tech companies in the world, biggest companies in the world, basically, right?
Yeah.
And they just had, during the worst year in the history of our lives, have had the best year in their histories. You know, it's a strange thing. I don't know. I'm not celebrating it, but it is, it's kind of hard to fathom. And this came in the wake of, or at least during, a period of heightened regulatory and antitrust interest in all of these, not Samsung so much, but and certainly Amazon, Apple, Google, and then Facebook, which I didn't discuss. But it's interesting. Anyway, Microsoft is it's kind of like a home business by comparison to some of these companies. Crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
It is interesting. Now, you're just doing revenue. When you compare profit or profit
it's
margin.
Different. I mean, right. So, for example, Amazon typically has a relatively small profit.
Not this time.
Not this time. That's why I said typically. But I mean,
well,
given
it was still
the nature
small.
Of business,
I mean, it's like only 14% or something. But still, a lot of profit.
So I haven't done this, but I mean, one of the things that will always be fascinating about Apple is that they're primarily a hardware company. I know their services are coming on strong and is actually now, I think, the second biggest business there. But for a hardware company, I bet their margins are still better than all of those other companies, which is nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah.
That should be impossible. It literally is impossible for every other company on Earth. But somehow, this company makes and sells hardware devices and still has... I think the overall margin at Apple, I think, was 39.something% this past quarter.
Oh. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is.
Amazon's net income on $126 billion was $7.2 billion. So.
Yeah. Most quarters, it's like $1,700.
I know.
You know, it's often
Jeff
something
wanted to go
small.
Out with a bang, I think.
Yeah,
you
did.
Yeah.
See, I have that knob. I hope he takes a knob with him. The profit knob.
The
dial he turns.
Right. I need a new boat. Let's twist that thing to the right a little.
All right. I think we're ready to go to the back of the book. If you all do, we can do it.
Yep.
Let's start with Paul. And
I wanted to talk about the Stadia thing because I know people are freaking out. Or they're just celebrating it because they hate Google for some reason, whatever. Okay. But the thing is... I look at this and the natural reaction to this is to kind of compare game streaming to other markets and where does this thing kind of fall, you know? And would you be stupid to be spending money on Stadia, especially given what just happened? And honestly, the more I look at this, I don't really see this as a huge risk, right? Because Stadia, because of the nature of this business, it's actually very different from what I'll call like a pure game streaming service, like Xbox Game Pass Ultimate with game streaming, I think is the name of it, xCloud, or Amazon Luna, right? Where the idea there is you pay a monthly fee and you get access to some library. And while you're paying that fee, you can play any game you want, and they stream, so you don't have to download them to your console, your PC, or whatever. Microsoft, off the top of my head, probably offers, I don't know, 175-ish games now, 100-something through just Game Pass. And then EA Play. You know, they have all these different things going on. So there's a nice library there, right? And, of course, that's going to get better. And then, of course, the hardware compatibility is going to get better as well. We know that. Stadia doesn't do that, right? So Stadia is actually free, and you buy the games. Like, you buy them like you would buy them for, like, you used to go into a GameStop and buy, like, an Xbox game or something, or a PC game. Like, you actually just buy the game, and then you get the right to, it's in your cloud library, and you can stream it to whatever devices they support. And if you do want to pay for Stadia, you can. There's a pro version. They give you a handful of free games. They give you 4K gaming. I think they give you some kind of a, I don't know if it's Dolby Atmos or some kind of 5.1 surround sound capability, whatever it might be. But realistically speaking, you don't have to do that. And you can just play these games basically on the service for free. You just have to buy the game. So it's different, right? And then, so given that, like, I don't see a lot of risk to Stadia, because if you think about it, most people don't play the same game over and over again for their entire life, except for me. I play Call of Duty all the time, so that's why these services don't necessarily make sense for me. But you get in the, you buy a game and you play it for some amount of time, and then you're done. And so it doesn't really matter where you buy it, as long as you're not going to go back and play it again and again and again, and then you're worried like maybe a year or two down the line they kill Stadia. If you're going to play a game for 3 months, 4 months, whatever, like, who cares where you get it? It's like renting a movie. You're just gonna watch the movie. So I would say to people, don't buy movies from Microsoft, because I don't know that service is going to be around for a long time. I wouldn't trust it. But you could rent a movie from it. Who cares? You're just watching it once. So I think the Stadia technology works well. And Google has a strategy for bringing that technology to third-party game developers as well, so they can have their own services, which, by the way, I think is super smart. And what they should have always done. But as far as like, it, you know, if you just want to get in and play a game for certain types of gamers and you want to be able to play it anywhere, they have a good, you know, hardware compatibility thing. Honestly, Stadia is fine. Like, and it works well. So I wouldn't worry about it. If you want to play a lot of different games and you like the, it's kind of the Spotify model or Netflix model where you can access any of the stuff they have in a big library. I mean, yes, Game Pass with game streaming or Luna or something like that would make more sense, because then you get that hopefully big library of games or whatever. But I don't know. This, to me, the reaction to this is like when Gmail goes down or Outlook.com goes down and people are like, see, that's why I put everything I need on a USB key. I can't trust the cloud. It's like, guys, like, look, there's problems with everything. You know, like, I don't know. So we'll see what happens to Stadia. But like I said, it got a lot better over the past year than what it was when it started, for sure. And depending on the type of gamer you are, I wouldn't avoid it personally. I mean, I did just cancel my subscription, but for you, it's probably fine, depending on who you are.
I have I have the pro account.
Yeah, yeah. I paid for it. I don't remember when I started it, November, December, yeah. But
I haven't played it much. You have an Xbox. You have a Series X. You don't need
it. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to move in and out of these things just to see what they're like. But Stadia and Luna, I would say from a technology perspective, both work well. You know,
so. I've been using GeForce. I started using GeForce Now. Remember, yeah, I was playing...
That's the next one on my list, GeForce Now.
Yeah, I was playing... was it Sea of Thieves?
So GeForce Now is another completely different business model, right? In this case, what you do is you're buying PC games from Steam or Epic or wherever you get them. And some percent, it's not 100%, unfortunately, but some percentage of those games you can then stream over GeForce Now. So you pay NVIDIA $5 a month, I think.
Yeah.
And you get some subset of your library on any device, which, by the way, is awesome, right? So, again, now you're buying the games, and if they're compatible with GeForce Now, you own them. But now you can stream them to other devices, right, which is kind of neat. So I have like a little NUC. It can't play games, really, but if I bought games from Steam that work with the service, I could play them on here because it's streaming over the cloud.
Exactly. And I can play it now on my M1 Mac because...
Yes, because they just came out with it.
They just came out with it.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think that's really... Honestly, I'm very excited by this. But this is why Stadia, it's such a big deal that Google seems to have lost heart because... If they go away, those games you bought go away too.
Well, so that's the question. Let's look at that real quick. So what are the possibilities? Like, let's say tomorrow Google's like, you know what? This isn't working. We're going to give up. So they have built this infrastructure, and they are going to sell it to third parties. Like, Microsoft's doing the same thing with, I think it's called, like, PlayFab or whatever.
So they transfer you to some other company maybe?
Yeah, that would be one of the outcomes, right? Yeah. So, like, the worst outcome would be, sorry, you had a good run, and, you know, thanks for the money. I partial refunds or full refunds, depending on when it happened, might be in the cards. Moving it to a different service might be in the cards. When Microsoft killed Groove Music and Groove Music Pass, they did a deal with Spotify where you could move all your playlists and your collections over to Spotify. And it didn't cost you anything, obviously, but then you have to subscribe to Spotify. And maybe they could do something like that through some other, you know, some or all of your game library appears now on some other service or something. That would be a possibility. But again, like, this is going to depend on the person, but I think for a lot of people, some game comes out, Cyberpunk, you're like, I'm going to play Cyberpunk, mm-hmm. right? And you can play it wherever you want to play it, Xbox, console, or, PC, or through Stadia, and you play it for X number of days, weeks, months, whatever it is, and then you're done with it, kind of, right? I mean, not 100%. I mean, I know sometimes you go in and out, but I think for a lot of people, it may not matter, you know? The other thing, Google could just keep the infrastructure up because they're using it anyway for third parties, and your Stadia games will always be in this library, and you can maybe you can play them on it through a web browser forever, maybe. You know, I don't know. It's like the Microsoft movies and TV thing. Like, I every once in a while I hear from someone who's like, yeah, I bought like 200 movies through this Microsoft thing, and now I'm worried they're going to go out of business. And I'm like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? Like, why would you buy movies from Microsoft? But if someone came to me and said, yeah, I bought, not that you would have bought 200 games, but I bought 10 games from Stadia and I spent $600. It's like, ugh, why? Like, why would you do that? But if you bought one game, which is probably what most people did, or
right,
or two,
that's what I did.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it don't, you know, whatever. You'll be okay.
Okay. I hope so.
He's holding your hand.
This is not going to be the end of the world.
Okay. App pick of the week. Also,
right. These are going to be two curious app picks for most people. This will be confusing. How do I explain this? So people probably know that, well, if you're a Google user and you use Chrome, you can use the Chrome password manager built into the browser and store your passwords, right? And they've been improving it over time. And recently they came up with a thing where they'll tell you if your password was compromised, and they'll recommend you replace weak passwords with passwords that it generates, and blah, 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 blah. And that's nice. Those things go to mobile. So if you were on an iPhone or an Android phone, you can choose to use Google as your password autofill in apps, right, as well as in the browser. And that brings all those passwords you saved into the system. You can use third-party password managers, LastPass, etc. Those work the same way. They work in the browsers. They work on mobile platforms. And this may be a little foreign for people listening to this show, but Apple has one as well. It's called iCloud for Passwords. So it's an iCloud feature. And typically on Apple's platforms, this is through Safari, which works across, obviously, Mac and the iDevices. And then the mobile apps on iOS and iPad, and probably on the Mac, although I'm not 100% sure on that one. So what they've done this week is they brought iCloud for Passwords to Windows, and they've done it in two different ways. There's a Chrome extension, which brings the passwords into Chrome, and there's an iCloud client, which has been around for a long time, which has added this capability. So you can access your passwords in Windows as well through like a kind of a control panel looking thing. So why would anyone do this? Well, you trust Apple, for one thing. That would be one reason. Maybe you use an iPhone and an iPad, and so you're using that for your password manager. You probably never thought about what it was, but if you're using Apple, that's what it was. But you use a Windows PC and you use Chrome like a normal person. So this is a way to get all of your passwords everywhere, right? It's the same reason why Microsoft made, I guess it's through Edge, the ability to bring your edge-based passwords onto mobile as well, right? So on Android and iOS, you can choose to use Microsoft instead of the built-in thing that Google has or Apple has or whatever. So this is Apple bringing their passwords everywhere, just like Google and Microsoft have already done. So there you go. I'm not going to use it, by the way, but anyway, it's out there. If you're, you know, use Apple devices, fine. And Vivaldi is one of several solutions to Mary Jo's vertical tabs problem. They've had vertical tabs for a while. This week they added another new tab feature. This is funny to me, but they've added a second horizontal row of tabs. So if you think about a tab bar, we have tabs running across the top of the browser.
Now
there's
got
a
two.
Second row now.
Oh.
So you can have more tabs.
More tabs.
Which, of course, you're like, well, I didn't have three rows, you know. So actually, it's not that simple.
I just
simple.
Have a tab page with all the tabs.
I know.
Right. It's not an overflow thing. So I guess I don't use this feature in any browser. So maybe this is just a common thing. Like maybe Chrome and Edge have this and I just don't really use it. But Vivaldi supports something called tab groups. And it's just a way to have a collection of tabs together as a tab, and then you can click on it. Kind right. of cascades down or whatever. So the way they're doing it now is because of the proliferation of tabs, the second tab row is used for tab groups now. So you have your individual pages, I guess we'll call them tabs, on the top, and then tab groups are in the second row. So you can, you know, if you're a tabaholic or whatever, not the soft drink, but the browser tab, this is a solution for that, I guess.
Okay.
I've been using Vivaldi this week, and also I've been experimenting again with Brave. Honestly, Vivaldi's it's a really nice browser.
It's got a nice it's a Chromium thing. Engine, right? But it's right. It's all about the GUI. It's That's all right. about the UI. That's it's right. all about the stuff on top. And I've been tempted.
And again, I feel like that's where you should be competing, you know?
Well, it is. I mean, you've got – so have the engine, so it's compatible with everything.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, you know – compete on
it can
privacy.
Look like anything you want it to look like, and it can be
exactly.
overloaded with controls and panels, yeah. and yeah. you know, or it can be super minimalist. It's you know,
yeah. I've been thinking about trying Vivaldi.
It's nice. I would I like the idea of Brave, and I feel like Brave is where I'm probably moving eventually. But Vivaldi is a little more mainstream, I guess is the way
I would say the opposite.
Interesting. I feel like, I don't know, Brave is like this halfway point between like Tor and normal people. you know what I mean? Like,
well, it has ad blocking turned on by default.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right. So well, here's the problem with Brave from my perspective is because of their emphasis on privacy,
right?
They don't have what I would call it. It probably is sophisticated, but I call it like an easy to use sync system. So if you use Brave on multiple devices, so it could be multiple computers, Macs, and also like phones and tablets and so forth, it's the way you get them all together, syncing together is so tedious. I
don't find it that
every
hard.
Time
it's
I,
instead of a password, it's like 12 or 15 words. It's a passphrase of random words. I just keep that in my Notion notebook.
On a USB
paste it in. Yeah. Or I just keep it somewhere that I'm synced and I paste it in.
I'm trying. The other thing I don't like about it, by the way, what? Stupid icon is terrible. It's terrible.
The lion.
I hate the icon.
I'm going to try Vivaldi because of you and vertical tabs.
I would look at it. You'll spend hours just configuring it. It's crazy.
That's the thing, and that's kind of almost what I
don't
want.
There's a lot of UI.
Yeah. Because it's kind of plain. Unless you customize it, it's kind of plain, right?
Well, I mean, it tries to think through like what most people would kind of want.
Right.
And my approach to this is like, okay, where do I go to turn the panel off again? And how do I get my new
tab
page that I like? And I do all that stuff. But, it works well, though. It's good.
There's also a focus mode. Vivaldi is fading content and pausing media. Focus elsewhere for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I think it has built-in ad blocking as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it does. That's part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it has sync, which is good.
Yeah, it has normal, what I would call normal sync.
It's got a million themes. I'm going with hot pink.
It really does, yeah.
All right, Mary Jo Foley time. Starts with the Enterprise pick of the week. Sorry to... Paul and I were just kind of going on and on. I apologize.
Yeah, you guys were all embedded in your browsers.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. Well, we're going to make up for that.
Better than where we're usually embedded.
I'm usually embedded in bed.
So earlier in the show today, we talked about the confusion around all the different features constantly being rolled out for Office 365 and Microsoft 365. Well, I found this site called roadmapwatch.com. Mm. I found it through a Microsoft blog post that referenced it, and I checked it out, and I'm like, this is what we need. This is what we all need. The site was created by someone who works at Microsoft, whose name is Joe Pelarchio, but he makes a big point. This site is in no way affiliated with Microsoft. all the site does is tracks features that Microsoft is updating and creating for Office 365. What I like about it is you can browse by feature.
Yeah.
It connects to the Office 365 roadmap. And best of all, you can subscribe via RSS.
Love
which
it.
I have been doing for the past couple weeks.
Get your updates.
Every day I get a new post with what they added since yesterday to the roadmap.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're tracking 925 features right now. They've been tracking them since 2015, and they check every single day for things that change on the roadmap. So this is awesome. It's free. And if you use RSS and you care about Office 365, I would say give this a try, because it definitely will keep you up to date at the most granular level of what is happening, but also in a way that's usable and understandable. Regarding Office 365.
Can you sort it by when things are happening?
No.
Yeah.
You cannot. But it does link you right into the roadmap, which is cool. Like if you see a feature that you are like, oh, what is that? You click on it and it takes you to the roadmap entry. So you can find out more about it, which is cool. And they usually have like tentative rollout dates on the roadmap for Microsoft 365, which I find they pretty much never meet. They're just placeholders pretty much at this point.
They should just have a little progress bar, because those are never accurate either. They could just be going across slowly.
Yeah. But this site is cool. I have to take my hat off to Joe. He works on Teams at Microsoft as a specialist. And he doesn't want this to be affiliated.
The need to track new features.
He does. Right? He does. He gets it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah, try it. Try it out. Roadmapwatch.com.
All the kids are doing it.
The kids are doing it. Roadmapwatch.com.
Codename pick of the week.
Okay. I don't know if you guys remember this. It's not actually a code name. It's more like an acronym. But this, when I worked for PC Week back in the day, JetBlue versus JetRed was like a big hot topic. I don't know if anybody else remembers this, but JetBlue is a NoSQL database that Microsoft used inside of a lot of its own products. Like it still is the database in Exchange. Like it's what Exchange uses as its database. And Windows clients use JetBlue also. JetRed was used by Access, Microsoft Access.
And yeah, JetBlue's been around forever.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So there were all these rumors back in the day, was Microsoft going to like take the JetRed engine out of Access and make everything JetBlue, or was JetRed going to be the survivor? It was like this big, crazy controversy. So the reason it's in the news this week is Microsoft open sourced JetBlue this week.
Oh, that's
they
huge.
Put it on GitHub. I know.
What?
So JetBlue is also known as the extensible storage engine. And right now they're not accepting contributions from the community, but they said they're going to in the future. So if you want to like just dig around in the code of the database that's inside of Exchange, you can do that now.
And this is the GitHub. Current version of Jet?
I think it is.
Holy cow.
I know.
Wow.
Jet stands for Joint Engine Technology, if you are wondering. And I learned today when I was, let me say one more thing. I always wondered about the red and blue thing. Maybe I knew this at one point and I didn't. But according to this article I found on the web, which may or may not be true, they said, where is it? I'm trying to find out why they called it one in red. Blue referred to the color related of the flag of Israel, and red was the flag of Russia. I'm like, what?
No, that makes no sense.
See, that red blue reminds me of the early Halo days. Remember they had blue versus red? Yeah. It was like the two teams.
Yeah. Oh, red pill. The red pill. Yeah.
So this, by the way, this first version of Jet goes back to 1992. This is a 30-year-old
technology. Oh, yeah. So, by the way, this is the engine that is probably still behind Exchange, and they were at one point going to replace it with SQL Server.
There we go. That was a controversy. Right. I'm like JetBlue, JetRed, and yeah, you're right. They were thinking about putting SQL Server in. And I think they did work towards that, but then it never happened.
They did.
And JetBlue stayed.
Well, because they wanted everything on the same architecture. Yeah, that made a certain amount of sense, whatever. But.
Yep. So I'm trying to think in my head, like, why did they open source JetBlue?
That's wild. It feels like they might be abandoning it. I mean, what could that be?
So one thing to think about is everything in the Office world these days is being built on their underlying graph APIs and their substrate. So I don't know if that means they take away the existing kind of underlying infrastructure and replace it with new things, but I just am super interested why they did this now, and I haven't really heard why. There's a good article about this from Tony Redmond, who works with Paul and Brad on Petri, if you want to know more of the ins and outs of Microsoft open sourcing this.
I don't know. It's been 2 years. They need another database out in the world.
I know, right? I mean, they have so many databases at Microsoft already, like if you count all the Azure SQL and Cosmos DB everything.
It's fascinating because for years Microsoft has said, oh, we can't open source our stuff. There's too much proprietary code in there, too much licensed code in there.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated.
They're going to find out it's just like a bubble sort routine and that's the whole database.
It's kind of the right thing to do.
Yeah, really. It is.
I guess it's core technology, but it's not, it'd be good if the community picked it up and developed it, improved it,
and helped with it. Helped with it. If they're keeping it, that's what I wonder. I wonder if they're keeping it as the infrastructure.
If anyone figures it out, we could get Storage Plus going again. You know,
it's all in C++. That might be part of the problem because I think Microsoft's moving away from that, right? Sure. To C# or
Rust.
Well, you might not want to use C# on something this low level.
Maybe. Interesting.
I don't know. Anyway, it's still pretty interesting. Yeah. And it just reminded me of the early heyday of technology when we talked about JetBlue, JetRed, and all that stuff.
First shipped in Windows NT 3.5.1.
That's what I said to Paul. Look at my codename pick. This is going to trigger a lot of memories.
Is it okay? Okay, wait a minute. Now this is interesting. On the GitHub post, is this the Jet database engine? No. Well, it depends. The question is not quite correct. Most people do not know that Jet was an acronym for an API set, not a specific database format or engine.
Yeah.
So just as there's no such thing as the SQL engine, there are many implementations. There is no specifically Jet engine. It's a spec.
We're not talking about Sasquatch here. There's a SQL engine.
So there are two separate, this is all from Microsoft on the GitHub. There are two separate implementations of the Jet API. This is, as Mary Jo said, the JetBlue engine implementation. Yeah. And you're right. The origin of the colors have an amusing source, by the way. Most people think of the Jet engine as JetRed that shipped under Access. It's not that Jet engine.
Oh, okay. You're right. JetRed and JetBlue are totally different.
They're different. JetBlue was originally developed by Microsoft as an upgrade to the JetRed engine, but was never used that way. Instead, it was for Exchange. Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah.
So why did they release it?
They don't say that part.
They don't say.
And you're right. The color of the flag of Israel and the color of the flag of Russia.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
Microsoft referred to it in the GitHub post.
Yep. Okay. So, yeah. Anyway, if you're a historian and you like this kind of stuff, go check it out on GitHub.
I want to look at the code.
It's under Extensible Storage Engine because that's the real name of it.
Yeah, ESE. But that's why they called it that, so that people wouldn't be too confused. Yeah. I wonder if they still use, what was it, Hungarian notation for the variables?
Yep.
Simonis? Yep.
Oh, Charles Simonis.
Yeah, C++.
I mean, Hungarian notation was a like a straight C thing, but they probably used, I mean, they.
Oh, no, they used it in, I think.
I was going to say they used it in NT days.
Because it was really how you determine variable names based on their function.
Yeah, it was like almost camel case.
And they do kind of look a little bit Hungarian. I'm just scanning through it. You know what? It's good because it's clean code. You can look at it and know what it does. You know, processor supports CRC32. It's pretty obvious what that's going to be. Wow. Gosh. Looks like they've taken all the profanities out of the comments, however. So that's that's too bad.
Exactly.
In fact, I don't see
understandable.
I don't see a whole lot of commenting.
Yeah.
Maybe they
because they removed all
they
the
removed
swears,
the comments.
That's all that was.
They removed all the comments. I think they did. I don't see any comments. Yeah. At least not in the file I'm looking at. Huh. Yeah. All right. Wow. I got some homework for tonight. And now it's time for beer.
It is. Snow days make you want to drink Imperial Stouts.
Drink heavily. Nonstop.
The brewery, B-R-U-E-R-Y, a very famous brewery in California, makes some excellent Imperial Stouts, including one called Bakery : Coconut Macaroons.
I love it. I want it.
It tastes like coconut macaroons. It does. It's a bourbon barrel aged pastry stout, as they call them.
Pastry stout.
That's a term in craft beer these days, meaning a sweet stout that they actually many times brew with the actual ingredients you would bake something with. So this is brewed with coconut and vanilla. And it tastes to me like a lot like a macaroon. I love macaroons, so it's appreciated. But a warning, this comes in a 16-ounce can that you can find them around. It's 13%. It's 13%. Yeah. So you want to share it with friends unless you want to just make that your one and done.
Get under the Afghan, lock the doors. You'll be fine.
Yeah. It's I like these pastry stouts, but only when I'm in the mood for a dessert beer. That's what it is. It's a dessert beer. It's not something you're going to just drink all day long while you're snowed in.
These guys also have a beer called Partridge in a Pear Tree.
If it tastes like partridge, I'm going to pass.
It's got real partridge in it.
Real partridge.
If you get to the bottom, a little bone comes out.
I can get this delivered in California.
Yeah, you could try. The brewery makes excellent beer. Anything from them is going to be excellent.
When it says select quantity, do they mean one can or one six-pack? Why would you order one can? Well, it is $8.
Did you get a discovery pack, Leo, and try all of
them? Yeah, they do. They have discovery packs with, like, different
I really
want to
try this. I want to see if it really tastes like coconut macaroons.
You know, it's not exactly like a coconut macaroon. None of these things taste exactly
like chocolate. I figure it tastes exactly like beer.
You know what? They don't taste a lot like beer to me.
Really? Okay.
No, they don't. I feel like they taste more like dessert than they taste like beer.
They have a white chocolate wheat wine beer.
Oh, the brewery white chocolate is one of the best dessert beers I've had. If you like white chocolate, it's really amazing. Like it tastes like white chocolate. Oh, a lot of people hate white chocolate.
Oh, I can join the club.
Yeah.
It's only $70 a quarter. Should I join the Preservation Society?
I think you should get a sample pack first.
You get the Elvis Mash.
Yeah, definitely get a sample pack.
Look at this. Yeah. Elvis Mash, Saison Breton, which I would love. I love Saisons.
It's like access level, preservation, hoarder.
Yeah. So I think that tells you which, like, it's in the preservation, so I would get that, I guess. I don't know. Four beers every quarter for $70.
Bottles though. They're big bottles, right?
They're okay. Got it.
You got to go discovery pack.
I think I might.
Yeah, try that first.
Cookie Stout, Saison Breton.
Beers are really, really good.
Nectar.
They have amazing ones.
Freckles.
A passion fruit beer.
It's not cheap, but
They're very high quality. They're one of the really good craft breweries.
Wow. As soon as I start entertaining. It might make sense.
Where is this located?
Or you could bring it home. It's in Placentia. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's a California brewery.
It is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Placentia. LA area.
Yep. Placentia. Really? Placentia. That's the name of a place.
Yeah.
It is.
It's where the placentas yes, go to die.
Yeah, I was going to say that's where all the placentas end up.
Guys.
No, never mind.
Sorry, too much.
Forget we said anything. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this broadcast of Windows Weekly. If you've enjoyed our show, we encourage you to come back again next week. Wednesdays. I'm a little punchy.
You know, I have to say, I've been a little distracted. I'm looking out the window because I have a window. Mm-hmm. And a Mustang Mach-E drove by. And I think I strained my neck turning.
I am actually really curious about that vehicle.
It's across the street. They parked. And as soon as we're done here, I'm running over.
Sure.
Yeah. Because, I have one on order, Paul. I'll be getting it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh,
the fact that I see one here means maybe mine's there too. Anyway, so that's why I'm a little distracted. Yeah, no, I have one on order. Wow. Our show today. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific. I told you I was distracted. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. What's going on? Who am I? What am I doing here? 1800 UTC. You can watch us do anything we do here live. You can watch on the live stream, which is at twit.tv/live. Actually, it's audio as well as video, so watch or listen. If you're watching and listening live, chat live. Get all of the senses engaged at irc.twit.tv. What else? Paul is at therot.com. That's his blog. Become a premium member for the best results. And he also sells his book, The Windows 10 Field Guide, soon with a chapter by Mary Jo Foley on Notepad.
Guys, no.
I'm trying. I'm starting a rumor.
Notepad tips and tricks.
Tips and tricks for Notepad. That would be available at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley is a... blogs for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Both file all the time. So if you want to keep up on tech news, specifically Microsoft news, that's the place to go, as well as stop by here every Wednesday. We have on-demand versions of the show at twit.tv/WW. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel. You could subscribe in your favorite podcast. That'd be the best thing. If you like the show, please review it at Apple's music site. Or in the Apple podcast, the review helps, of course, others discover this wondrous show. And we really appreciate that. Last chance to take our survey. It ends Friday, which means if you, we do this once a year just because we don't know anything about you because it's an RSS feed. But it's helpful for us to know more about what you like and don't like. But it's also helpful for us to sell ads, to be able to tell advertisers, this is a bright bunch of people. So
it's not like LinkedIn, so answer it correctly.
go to twit.tv/survey21. If you haven't, I think we need 500 more to get 10,000 responses, which is kind of where we're shooting for. So it's statistically valid. So if you haven't filled it out, of course, it's completely optional. But if you would, that would help us a lot. twit.tv/survey21. Guys, I hope you survive snowpocalypse. Mm-hmm. Stay
warm. I
just
was looking up. I'm like, there's someone throwing snow off our roof right now.
Oh, well, they're cleaning it off. Sure.
Yeah, they're cleaning it off.
That's so the helicopters come.
Either that or you're falling sideways. And
I don't know what's happening right now.
I'm really jealous. I miss snow. I would love, but I know it's only a brief fling and then you regret it.
It's pretty.
Then it's mucky here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit much.
But New York City with 16 inches of fresh snow.
I had to cut a trench into the front of the house so the dog would go to the bathroom outside. She took one step into it, fell into it, and was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. Dogs and snow.
Not as too much.
Right?
Yeah.
She likes the snow. It was just too deep to use, as a bathroom or whatever.
Yeah, scary. Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Stay safe. Stay warm. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
If you like Android with a heavy dose of fun and entertainment, then you're going to love All About Android. It's me, Jason Howell, along with my co-hosts Ron Richards and Florence Ion. Every Tuesday, we discuss the news items that matter most, the hardware and devices that are running Android, and the apps that run on top of them. Plus, we answer your email each and every week. That's All About Android on twit.tv.